Hi, welcome to the podcast. I am Joe Posnanski, senior writer at Sports on Earth, and I am fairly confident that this is actually recording, which is a big change from the last time that I brought on our guest. You know, I'm executive producer for the brilliant Parks and Recreation, and perhaps the nation's leading advocate for peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, Mike Shore. Mike, welcome.
What do you mean, perhaps? how dare you, sir? I'm certainly the nation's leading advocate for peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
There are others. The Peanut Butter and Jelly Advocacy Corporation is very based in Lawrence.
We have a Washington based lobby group that puts a lot of pressure on Congress to advance our cause. If you don't know what Joe is talking about, I periodically go on insane Twitter rants, usually between the hours of 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. when my wife is away and out of town, about the proper ways and the improper ways to consume peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
And it's really consumption you're talking about. You're not really talking about production of the peanut butter.
No, there is construction also plays a role in it. I have very, very specific guidelines for a proper peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which I can go into at length if you want to, although that might just turn and just make everyone shut off the podcast right away. Maybe we should get through the actual podcast portion of the podcast before I start ranting about this.
Yeah, we will. But I'll ask you one question to just start.
Please.
People that put peanut butter and jelly on the same side of the bread and put the bread on top. Yes or no?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct. And it's very controversial. I get a lot of heat for this. There's a lot of op-ed pieces that are written in newspapers all over the country complaining about this method. But I stand by it. I believe that's the correct method. Okay. And I know a lot of people think I'm crazy. A lot of people think it's insane. It's how I have always done it. I believe it to be the best method for making the sandwich.
Okay, you're wrong, but it's good though because it's just wrong because it's just I'm not going to get into it. You know, we will. We'll spend the whole podcast talking about that. Which actually,
yeah,
would be
we'll do a separate. We should do a separate one of these things that's just about peanut butter and jelly. And that we'll, as soon as we're done with it, we'll remove the digital tape that you recorded it on and just throw it in the garbage, and then we can be done with it.
Well, the good
news.
No
one will ever have to actually.
The good news is I probably wouldn't be able to record it anyway. So you know
that's right.
The last time we did this, and I honestly believe, and I think you'll agree with me, it was the best podcast ever. It clearly
it was really really good.
It was really good, and I failed. I only failed to record half of it. I will say that. I'll give myself a little credit. Unfortunately, the half I failed to record was Michael's half. So so it was just me talking, and then I'd be this long silence, and you just hear me laughing, and then there's long – it was horrible. It's horrible.
I think that with all the technical problems that you've had with this thing, the only possible next step is if your recording equipment actively starts attacking you, like in your sleep. Like, that's the only way it can get worse is if it starts, like, if you try to record a podcast and after you're done, you find out that both that it hasn't recorded anything and also has somehow managed to erase your bank account. That's the only way that this can get worse.
I hear it laughing at night. I do. I hear it just kind of giggling. It shouldn't be that complicated. I really believe we live in a time frame, and maybe we actually this is possible. But we live in a time where I should be able to press a button like on my desk and record a podcast, right? I mean, it's like
yes, no question,
It's clearly me, and I accept it fully. But this is recording. I'm seeing it record, so very excited. Today we're very streamlined on the podcast today. Very very streamlined. We're going to be talking Baseball Hall of Fame, and then our draft, which again. More serious than the usual draft for Christmas.
Yeah.
It's kind of a serious draft this time around. So, but we're going to talk Baseball Hall of Fame, and I think you know we're going to go through the ballot. But what I really want to start with is to get it out of the way. You and I, we're a little bit different on the steroid question. I think we're just we're in the same sphere. I think, but we're a little bit different. You're probably a little more bothered by the steroid time. Than I am. Is that fair?
Yeah, I that's absolutely fair to say. I am deeply bummed out by it.
Yeah.
And I'm aware of every argument about the legality of it and the lack of enforcement and the fact that everybody was doing it, and the also the arguments that are like, well, who cares? The game was fun to watch. Like, I've debated this, as have many people, I think, ad nauseum. And it just comes down to, like, it's left a bad feeling in my gut. I just hate it. It just really annoys me. And the basic reason, it's nothing more complicated than the fact that I got very, like, obsessive about Barry Bonds at the height of his powers, and was so entranced by him specifically as a guy who had solved the game, who was so dominant at what he was doing that he was walked 232 times in a season, and, you know, whatever, 150 of those intentional or whatever it was.
That's crazy, yeah.
And that seemingly any pitch that was out of the strike zone he took, and any pitch that was in the strike zone he hit 500 feet. And I kind of knew, as did everybody, that it was it was enhanced performance. And then when it was, like, revealed when I read the book, the Game of Shadows book, and all of the evidence was laid out, it just bummed me out. It's nothing more complicated than that. It bummed me out.
Yeah.
So I think the headline, though, for me in this whole Hall of Fame thing is I cannot figure out a sort of ethos or an approach to Hall of Fame voting that I feel good about. I don't feel good about excluding all of these guys. Because there's obvious problems with that, namely, you know, some of them it's only been rumored, some of them it's been proven. There are other guys who pretty much universally people believe used steroids who were never accused of anything. So what do you do with them? But I also, like, I get annoyed by the idea of putting them all in, because I think that they, in sort of collusion, frankly, with a very willing to look the other way league and a very willing to look the other way media, they kind of cheated. So there's no solution that I find, specifically with respect to the Hall of Fame, there is no solution that I find satisfactory. And I don't know. I literally don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant when I said we're in the same sphere. I'm also bummed out by it. And I don't think you could be a baseball fan and not be bummed out by it, because it wasn't just that it wasn't, you know, even when Barry Bonds, you knew that he was probably doing something, which was pretty, you know, I mean, it was probably in 2000, you already started realizing something was going on. And by then, McGuire and Sosa's question, you know, they were coming up for question and all that. Even by then, though, it's still different than sort of seeing this entire era being corrupt. And it's that, to me, is what I think happened. And I mean, there were a lot of very honest players, no question, and people who didn't do anything during that time period. But they also didn't speak out either. And it was very, there was this collusion, I think, between everybody to kind of look the other way. And it does bum me out. But I still, the way I look at it, and I think this is where I think we're a little bit different, I also don't think there's a satisfactory answer. To me, if you want to view the Hall of Fame as what the Hall of Fame should be, you know, which is only the very, very best players, it's awfully tough to say, okay, well, then put in these guys that clearly cheated the game. On the other hand, that's not really what the Hall of Fame is. It never has been, you know, this sort of, ideal place. And at the same time, it happened. I mean, that was baseball during that time period. And I find it very, very difficult. I want to judge people. It wasn't Babe Ruth's fault that he never faced an African-American pitcher, but he never faced an African-American pitcher. I mean, it's right. There is something about the time period that you have to, in my mind, you have to sort of just if you love the game and you love the Hall of Fame and you want the Hall of Fame to represent what the game is, you look at the game's imperfections. And I think there's a line to be drawn. I really believe this. A line to be drawn once drug testing came in place. Because to me, afterward, and I think that, you know, we'll discuss it with Rafael Palmeiro, once you test positive and it's clearly not only against the law, but it's being enforced, that's a very different thing. That's where Pete Rose is. Pete Rose did what he knew precisely was against the law, precisely against the law of the game and the rules of the game and the ethos of the game. And he got caught, and that was the risk. And he lost the risk, and he's not going to go into the Hall of Fame while he's alive. I'm now convinced of that. And I don't know if that's fair, but he knew the rules, and I don't think these guys knew the rules. I don't think these guys. I think it was more than just looking the other way. I think there was the league certainly did not mind Sosa and McGuire. Let's put it that way. And
yeah, so, I mean, it's a good point because there really was the phrase is benign neglect, right? It's like, you know, when America as a nation just got really annoyed at England and started rebelling and stuff. The phrase was benign neglect because they had just kind of not really enforced. They had what technically were rules and laws and stuff for how the new colonies were supposed to behave themselves, but they weren't really enforcing them. So, and eventually America was just like, hey, well, then this is ridiculous. We're not going to be taxed without representation, et cetera, et cetera. Not to go too far down this history wormhole, but that's what the league would, you know, technically speaking, you weren't supposed to do steroids.
Right.
But they were aggressively not enforcing that rule, and I think it's impossible to argue that there wasn't a kind of like, you know, intentional let's look the other way attitude because the game was exploding in popularity, and Sosa and McGuire were setting attendance records everywhere they went, and it was exciting, and they, you know, the game had been damaged from the strike in '94 and all that sort of stuff. I mean, none of these are perfect analogies, but the Rose thing is, it's similar. It's like I think you're right. I don't think he's going to get in the Hall of Fame in his lifetime. And, you know, at some level, it's a little ridiculous. But at another level, there was basically one rule
right. That
baseball enforced. It was in every locker room. It was posted in every locker room. It's the most famous thing that ever happened. The most famous scandal that ever happened in baseball was the Black Sox scandal. And because of that scandal, there was a rule posted in every single locker room that said you can't bet on games. And the fact that he did that was like, well, sorry, man, maybe it's a ridiculous rule. Maybe you never bet on your team to lose. Maybe you, you know, all that sort of stuff. But that was a rule that they were actively enforcing, and so he blew it. So, you know, it's hard to have a lot of sympathy for the guy. I mean, obviously, if you just look at his numbers, you would say, of course, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And the same is true with a lot of these steroid guys. But then the question just becomes, how much do you think the league was enforcing the rule that they broke? And the answer is they weren't enforcing it at all.
No.
And they did nothing to enforce it. And frankly, the media did nothing. I mean, there's that famous reporter, the famous story of the reporter who saw the, whatever it was, creatine or whatever it was
right.
in McGuire's locker.
The press reporter, right.
Yeah, and he was basically just bullied out of reporting the story. It was just like they just bullied him and just, you know, beat him down and denied him access to the locker room or whatever.
Well, no, yeah, it was Andro, and he did report it, but he took a tremendous amount of heat for it. And yeah, I mean, it was willful. I mean, you know, by the way, I'm going to have my daughters listen to this podcast now because of the excellent history reporting. Did you? It was really good. I loved it. But I think willful is my question. I mean, and this is where it gets really tricky because everybody, I mean, like it's not tricky in other parts. It's tricky all the way through. But everybody will say, okay, well, the players' union did not, you know, they were powerful and they prevented drug testing from being done, and you know, Bud Selig wanted to, and everybody. I don't buy any of it. I think everybody was making money. I mean, it's to me, it's the 21 scandal all over again. Everybody was making money, and then somebody comes in and says, "Wait a minute, this is a problem," and everybody's like, "Well, wait a minute, what's the problem? It's entertainment. It's this. It's this and this." And then as the problem became larger and larger and larger, you had scapegoats, just like I think you do now. You have people pointing the finger the other way, just like you do now. And, you know, that to me is all well and good. They did. They cheated the game and cheated us, in, you know, people that wanted to believe in sort of what human beings can do naturally and all those sorts of things. But but by the same token, you know, you can't be naive about it either. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, it's in all sports. I don't believe it started in 1993. I don't believe the Hall of Fame is filled with players who didn't use steroids. I don't believe it. I mean, I think you can only be so, you know, you can only buy so much of what has become this narrative of, you know, Barry Bonds ruined the game. I mean, it's, you know, and I know you're not saying that, but I think this was what the game was. And what I want to do as a voter, and I am a voter, is I want to compare players to their time And I think I think you can certainly reduce reduce their performance by, you know, you can cut their stats. I'm happy with doing that. You can say with the guys like Clemens and Bonds, hey, I'm only counting their numbers up to a certain point. You can do all sorts of things, but I think to pretend it didn't happen, which I think is what a lot of people want to do, or to punish individuals for what I think was clearly a league-wide problem, is I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't feel good with that, and I don't want a Hall of Fame without him. I mean, to me, the Hall of Fame should tell the story of baseball, and I think those guys did not commit in any way, shape, or form a crime that at the time was viewed as, okay, you know what the punishment is if you get caught. It wasn't like that. There was no getting caught. There was nobody There was nobody even trying to catch you. So, but it's, you know, we're all talking in circles because it is unsatisfactory no matter what you do.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard, you know, as a guy who, again, is bummed out a little more, I would say, than the average person about the steroid era, it's also very hard not to come off sanctimonious.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard not to sound like I'm tisking people for something that just was very widespread and common, and ultimately, like, I mean, the funny thing about all these discussions is we're talking about an independent museum that is representative of a game that we all like. You know, it's like it's not the most serious thing in the world. And so every time I get really worked up about it, I kind of think like, oh, for God's sake, like, it's a Baseball Hall of Fame. And you're right, it should tell the story of baseball. And are we really going to say that Roger Clemens, for example, wasn't a part of the story of baseball? He was the story in baseball for a really long time. And, you know, I wish there were some clear answer to any of these questions. I don't think there is. And so it's a dealer's choice, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of what you want to do.
It's tough. I mean, it really is tough. And you're right, though. I mean, I think that's one. The other thing that gets tougher is we're not enshrining them to heaven. You know what I mean? I mean, it's not
right.
We're not saying, okay, look, that I'm damning their eternal souls forever if I keep them out, or that I am elevating them as the greatest human beings in the history of the world if I put them in. I mean, it's baseball. And I don't blame people, by the way, who say, look, to me, the Hall of Fame is an honor. Those guys were not honorable, so I'm not voting them in. That's fine. The only question I have for you then is, where are you going to start drawing the lines? Are you going to just draw the lines on people you suspect? Are you going to, you know, really start just going, okay, well, look, this guy probably did, he might have, this guy might not have. And what are you going to say when, and this will happen in the next 5 years, I'm predicting it, when you find out there's somebody in the Hall of Fame that used steroids that you voted for? What are you going to do at that point? There's nothing to...
Right, and also, you know, to go a step further, what about the fact that, like, everyone and his brother was using greenies all the way through
Absolutely.
The 50s, 60s, 70s? You know, it's not like steroids isn't the first illegal substance that was used in baseball. I mean, it's been around forever.
Sure.
So, you know, it's like, again, it's just impossible. You just have to kind of go with your gut at some level, which is a thing I don't really enjoy doing.
Okay, well, going with your gut, there are two guys on this ballot that I think are separate from everybody else, and that's Bonds and Clemens, in that they're the two best players on the ballot. They're two of the best players in baseball history. You could make a legitimate argument if you legitimize their stats that they are the two best players in baseball. I mean, you can make that argument. I wouldn't, mm-hmm. but you could. And they're also the two guys that have been most torn up by this. Although it should be said, neither failed a drug test, and both of them, Bonds with a little caveat there, both of them were cleared in court. I mean, of at least they were not cleared in court of using, but they were not convicted of lying about not using. So it's very, very shaky. But assuming you believe that they were steroid users, are you voting Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, you wrote a piece on Sports on Earth recently about this idea you have, which I think is actually a good place to start the discussion. And the idea, as I understand it, is that you create a kind of golden 100 players, right? It's like a sort of interior. It's a Hall of Fame within the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
It's like this is a special room in which I love the detail that you described. It should have really cool lighting. That's one of my favorite things.
I'm a big lighting
about it. But the idea, as I understand it, is you say, okay, the Baseball Hall of Fame tells the story of baseball, of the all the different eras of baseball, and all the players and managers and executives and lawyers and everyone who contributed meaningfully to the game of baseball. And then there's this kind of a special room that's reserved for the 100 greatest of all time. And that room is a living document. That there is a vote every few years to sort of reevaluate that room. So when a guy comes along, if Mike Trout has the career that we all think and hope he's going to have, and ends up being this, you know, phenomenal, you know, 14-tool player, that you can actually remove someone from the Golden 100 and say Mike Trout had a better career than that person based on his era, right? That's basically the idea, correct?
That is exactly the idea. You've explained it better than I did.
So what I like about that idea is it's a kind of more concrete way to do what baseball writers have been doing for a while, which is, you know, some people say, okay, if a guy's a Hall of Famer, he's a Hall of Famer, and you should just vote him on the first ballot. Baseball writers don't do that. They let people stew for a while. You know, there's guys, Burt Blyleven got in on his 15th and final try, and you know, there's guys like Jack Morris, who's up, for the 14th time this year,
right,
who may get in. And the reason that they do that, I believe, is to say that there's a difference between Willie Mays and, you know, whoever, Jeff Bagwell, right? So they say, okay, Willie Mays is the kind of no-brainer. Obviously, everyone in the world who's ever knows anything about baseball says Willie Mays deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And they're also saying, let's say, you know, Alan Trammell or Jeff Bagwell or whoever belongs in the Hall of Fame, but we're going to wait a number of years to kind of send that message that this player is not at the level that Willie Mays is at. And what your idea does, I think, effectively, is it says, let's just set up a special kind of, you know, 100 greatest of all time tier, so that if you believe that, you know, player X is a Hall of Famer, but he isn't at the level of Willie Mays and Ted Williams and whoever, you can still just say, okay, yes, you belong to be in the Hall of Fame, but you're not in the kind of inner sanctum of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
To me, it's a good idea for that, mostly for that reason, which is that this has been going on for a long time, that the BBWAA lets people stew in their own juices for a number of years to send the message to them and to the world that they believe that they are a Hall of Fame caliber player, but not at the same level as the no-brainers. So to that end, I think what might be good also about that is it could be a way to kind of distinguish in one's mind between guys who tainted the game with their actions and the guys who just were pure players, assuming that we have any idea who is pure, which we don't. So, but the point is if that were in effect, my argument would be, look, Barry Bonds was a Hall of Fame player before even the people who believe that he used steroids and reported on his use of steroids. Even before that moment, you could have made the argument if his career had ended the way Kirby Puckett's had ended.
Sure.
You could have argued, yeah, the guy's a Hall of Famer. That way you could vote him into the Hall of Fame and keep him out of that kind of inner sanctum. Now, before we go any further, there are 10,000 problems to the inner sanctum problem that are similar to all of the other problems that we're already discussing. Let's just have that as a general sort of umbrella caveat for this whole discussion. This is by no means a perfect solution, but it would be a way to say, look, Barry Bonds is one of the greatest of all time, and he was a phenomenal player before he injected anything into his body or put any weird cream on his calves or whatever he did. So let's vote him in. He deserves to be voted in, but his kind of, you know, the little tiny message that you send to the future of the world who, you know, goes and visits that building is he also, there was this other thing about him that kind of bummed us out, and so he's going to be in this other room. He doesn't get the benefit of the cool lighting that of the Joe Bosnanski inner sanctum.
I'm seeing red, a little green, you know, big lights, and all over. You know, here's what really inspired me to think of this brilliant idea that I came up with, which of course I stole from like 15 other people. But
sure.
But here's what it is. The Hall of Fame right now is a mess. It's kind of a messy, weird, nobody really, you know, I hear people all the time say, well, what they need to do is throw people out. They're not going to throw people out of the Hall of Fame. All right. That's not going to happen. So that's not an option. All right. So, I mean, I've gotten numerous people saying, well, you know, instead of putting Dan Quisenberry in, you should throw Bruce Sutter. Well, Bruce Sutter's in. He's in the Hall of Fame. They're not going to have like a, you know, some sort of like British, like, you know, you are no longer monarch scene or anything from Bruce Sutter.
Yeah.
Although it would be entertaining. I mean, not for him specifically, but that would be an entertaining, like, you know, thing people gather to get you pulled out of the Hall of Fame. But I think they're not going to do that. So what are we going to do? Okay, there's a standard that people think is the Hall of Fame, the Willie Mays, Ted Williams, Joe DiMaggio, Hank Aaron, Roberto Clemente standard. And then there's the real standard of the Hall of Fame, which is a whole bunch of guys you've never heard of are in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I mean, a lot of guys you've never heard of are in the Hall of Fame. And a lot, it's every single person that I've ever argued, you know, doesn't meet my standard. Jim Rice, Andre Dawson, Jack Morris, some guys that I've tried to say, look, I don't think they meet the standard. They're better than people that are in the Hall of Fame, though. There are people in the Hall of Fame worse than them, or we're not as good at players as them. So my feeling on it is, okay, look, this is already a mess. We're just completely saying, okay, well, Barry Bonds shouldn't be in the Joe DiMaggio, you know, level of the Hall of Fame. Yeah, but that's fine. But should he be in the George High Pockets Kelly Hall of Fame? You know what I mean? I mean, because he's also in the Hall of Fame. So to me, it's like, okay, look, that Hall of Fame exists. What we need and what I think people really crave is this pure, and I don't mean pure from like pure people, because I think nobody would say Ty Cobb, for instance, wouldn't be in the Great 100, you know, in a Golden 100 Hall of Fame. He was such a good player. He wasn't a good guy, but he was such a good player that, you know, maybe some people wouldn't vote for him, but I would imagine most people would. So I'm not talking about a pure thing. I'm talking about a Hall of Fame that features the 100 best players of all time. And I do think it works on this steroid level, because I do think you could easily look at Barry Bonds and go, okay, look, he was clearly one of the greatest players of all time if you consider his achievements legitimate. But I don't. I mean, I do. I mean, I don't. I'm in the middle on that. But if you say I don't consider them at all legitimate, don't put him in that 100. But don't tell me he's not a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's really where the whole concept kind of comes from. And you know, I have to say that I've gotten a lot of response to the idea, and the complaints that I've heard about it, I don't feel are, I'm not going to say they're not legitimate. Of course, they're legitimate, but I think that people are looking at kind of a dream world. I mean, they're looking at like, well, I don't want to make the Hall of Fame any bigger. I don't want to lower the standards. The standards are unbelievably low for the Hall of Fame. If you go, they are. If you knew somebody on the Veterans Committee in the 1970s, you're in the Hall of Fame right now. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You know, and the, you know, the 17 Negro Leaguers they put in, you know, four or five, you know, a few years ago when they didn't put Buck O'Neill in. Nobody knows about those. Nobody knows anything about Saul White, and nobody knows anything. You know what I mean? I mean, so that Hall of Fame exists. It's real. It's open daily. You can just go and see it. And so when you're walking into that room and you're going, oh, I want to see Ted Williams, and then you're like, well, wait a minute, what, this is not Ted Williams. You know, this is whoever. And I, you know, I could list 20 guys you've never heard of that are in the Hall of Fame. That exists. So I think it's I love the idea of trying to create an inner sanctum for the Hall of Fame. And I think that to me is like a legitimate thing. If you say Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens are not Hall of Famers, I think you're not looking what the Hall of Fame is. If you're saying they don't meet that incredibly high standard I have for the Hall of Fame, that might be true. And that might be very legitimate. And that would be a fascinating vote every few years. So
now, what about the idea that you could proportion the inner sanctum based on position or something? I wonder if that would be an extra added thing. Like you make,
I'd like
you
that.
Basically make. What if it's 99 guys, and it's 11 complete.
11 of each guy
or something.
11 of each.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I mean that would be probably a mistake, because you know I can't remember the actual number, but there's a shockingly small number of third basemen in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Like Ty Trainer is like the fourth best third baseman in the Hall of Fame, and I mean he was a great player, but it. You know, it doesn't break down that there's an even number of guys, but it would be kind of cool to lay it out. And again, I'm really focused on the amazing lighting that you talked about, but it would be cool to set it up as like that. You could lay it out as teams on a diamond or something. You could have like Madame Tussauds wax statues of the different guys, like standing at their positions. It's getting to be a big room now. It's got to be a gigantic room in order to pull this off.
I see this being, in fact, I think the Astrodome should be this thing, this room, really.
Just
there you go. Just what else? What are they doing with it? Have they destroyed the Astrodome? Has that been...
I think they still have, like, rodeos there and stuff. I used to go to the Astrodome all the time because my family lived in Houston, and it was terrible. It was such a terrible place to see baseball. But the best story that I have about the Astrodome is that I once went on a day when Nolan Ryan was supposed to pitch, and I was really excited because he was my favorite player, and they gave away those foam K things so that you could wave them around every time Nolan Ryan struck somebody out. And Ryan was scratched from his start, and Jim Deshays started in his place. And he struck out, like, two guys in six innings. And it was, like, a sad, like, yo, he struck out a guy. He waved the K's around.
Yay. Backward K for Jim Deshays. You know, just you know they were both looking. I mean, just like, oh, it's brutal. That is just brutal.
Yeah, he caught somebody looking on a changeup in the fourth inning, and then everyone sort of half-heartedly held up their K's, you know.
Okay, well, I'm all for this room, and I am for proportioning it. I don't know if you do it by position quite that way, but I think you could do it by era. There are lots of different ways. I mean, that's the fun part, is coming up with how this 100 would look and people, and I've gotten numerous people saying, oh, well, if you think the Hall of Fame now is controversial, imagine how controversial that is. I'm not opposed to controversy. I mean, I think that's the best part, is arguing about whether Ozzie Smith belongs in it or doesn't. But, you know, that's the cool part. That's a lot more fun than arguing every year whether Jack Morris belongs. I mean, it's sure. Arguing about these incredible players and their place in the game. That to me is what the Hall of Fame should be and is. And by the way, their Hall of Fame is great. I mean, it's a great place run by great people. I mean, it's a lot of fun. And the Hall of Fame itself has very little to do with any of this. I mean, this is the baseball writers that vote and baseball that really was responsible for so much of what's going on. So, all right, but we are... and by the way, I am keeping an eye on the clock because I'm worried that we're going to run out of, like, tape, because that's how my life is. And two, because, you know, we promised to start doing a little bit shorter things. So we're way behind since we've not discussed a single player. So I'm going to run through, and I'm going to get a yes or no. And I know that's tough, but you can expand a little bit, but. I am seeing on this thing, and I mean no disrespect to Don Mattingly and I'd say there are 20 people on this Hall of Fame, and if you include Mattingly, it's 21, that I think you could make a legitimate argument for. I'm not saying I don't have anywhere near 21 people that I'm voting for, but you could make a legitimate argument for. So I'm going to run through those, and no offense to Jeff Cirillo and Royce Clayton and those guys. I'm going to just ask you yes or no, and give you and see what you think. So Barry Bonds, right. At the end of the day, you have a ballot in front of you like I do right now. Barry Bonds, yes or no?
Yeah, I'm voting yes.
A disappointing yes. I agree. All right, Roger Clemens.
Same thing. Sad, disappointing yes.
It's like you just make an X, but it's just very light, and you just kind of, you could barely see it.
Yeah.
I was very surprised to note that as I was working up just some basic WAR numbers on these guys, that the third highest WAR on the ballot, and that is using baseball WAR and Fangraphs WAR together, wins above replacement, number three on the list was Curt Schilling. I was really surprised by that.
And
very, very interesting. Now, obviously, this is very close to your heart, but Curt Schilling, yes or no?
It's real borderline to me. I mean, he didn't quite have the kind of career numbers that technically, that classically sort of rubber stamp a guy.
Sure.
But in the world where, again, you're saying what's the story of baseball greatness, he had, you know, my argument against Jack Morris, and I'm a no on Jack Morris, I can skip to that right now, is that I believe that although he had a very long and good career, that his Hall of Fame credentials come down to a single game that he pitched. And it is one of the greatest pitch games in the history of the baseball postseason. Sure. And it happened to come at a moment that is like was the highest pressure moment in the world. But it's really about that one game for him. He had a very good career. He was never the best pitcher in his league. He was never given the Cy Young Award, which is a crude measure of being the best pitcher, to be sure. But he was never given a Cy Young. He was, you know, his ERA plus for his career, which is, you know, obviously 100 is average, is his ERA plus for his career is 105.
Yeah.
I mean, he was about 5% better ERA wise than the rest of the average pitcher in his league over the course of his career. Now, granted, he had a long career and he stuck around. He had some years at the end that he kind of stunk it up and stuff like that. But I believe that the reason that people are so fervent about Jack Morris really is about that Game 7.
Yes.
And the thing about Schilling is he had a number of those. He had a lot of those games. He had far more of those kind of games. His postseason career is ridiculous. And, you know, the Bloody Sock game, both of the Bloody Sock games, frankly, were incredible. But also with the Diamondbacks as well and everything. So it's real borderline. I think in the world where there's no inner sanctum, I think I may say no the first year and then maybe vote him say yes the second year or something like that. But I certainly would understand anyone saying yes, he's a Hall of Famer, because his WAR is very high, and because he had really unbelievable years. He had a number of unbelievably good years, and he also had a kind of a crazy postseason. I mean, it is obviously, I'm certainly biased about this, because the guy was brought to my favorite team with the express purpose of winning a World Series, and then he really did so. He was a massive part of that team in the regular season and the postseason at a time when he was really gutting out a kind of crazy injury. So, but even then, it's a real borderline. I think I would vote no. If there were an inner sanctum, I would say yes, but he's not in the inner sanctum. And without the inner sanctum, I might say no the first year and then maybe year two or three or something.
It's really, really tough. Like I said, I was very, very surprised how high his WAR is. He did have incredible years. He was a much better pitcher than Jack Morris. I mean, he really was. And Morris, you know, we'll just check him off the list. Obviously, I've written way, way too many columns about why I wouldn't vote for Jack Morris to change my mind now. But Jack Morris never even had a sub-3 ERA ever for a single season. I mean, that's in a pitcher's era for the most part. And you talk about how his ERA plus was really effective because he did have a couple of stinker years at the end. But one of those stinker years, he won 21 games, and I think that's been a big help to his Hall of Fame. I mean, one of the big things, he won 200 and whatever, 45 games or whatever. That's a big part of it. If he wins 209 or 216 or something, I don't think people are, even with Game 7, I think there's a real question. But he's in the 240s with wins. And
he's in the 250s, I think. I think he's at 255 or something.
Yeah. I mean, he hit
250. Yeah,
he's in that range. Yeah, I mean, and that's a big, big part of his case. I think Schilling is a yes. I think he was a dominant pitcher. He has the postseason to add to it. His inconsistency bothers me, though. I mean, it's a very, very up and down career. And let's face it, I lost a lot of money with his company. So I didn't. I'm just saying that. All right. Jeff Bagwell.
Well, Jeff Bagwell was really, really good at baseball. Like, really good. He doesn't have the 500 home runs or something that is the traditional, you know, dumb rubber stamp kind of thing, but he hit 450 or something. His on base percentage in his career is over 400. The slugging is 540. I mean, he, even in a very offensively minded era, I mean, if the strike hadn't happened, go back and look at his numbers in 94. If the strike hadn't happened in 94, you know, he might have done some serious damage to a lot of different records. The guy had a 950 career OPS. I mean, even in an offensively, you know, relatively easy offensive era, he played in a tough park and he played a really, really well. And I think that, you know, he's a guy that there's been a lot of steroid suspicion about. It's never been, nothing's ever been even hinted at or proven by any stretch, but it shocks me that he hasn't gotten more support. I think he's an easy yes.
I think the steroid question is haunting him. By the way, 254 wins for Morris.
All right.
You were closer than I. You win the showcase showdown. I think Bagwell's a yes. I voted for him. I think he's like one of those guys, and there are a couple of guys like that on this list where he was probably going to be really a shaky first year guy anyway. Then you throw in whatever steroid suspicions there are, which are, I think that's where it gets to be very sad and disgusting. I mean, I'm not saying Jack that I'll never know unless he tells us whether or not Jeff Bagwell used steroids or not. But I'm not going to just charge him with using steroids and not vote for him for the Hall of Fame because of some vague suspicions that I have. I've never heard it from anybody that would know. So it's really tough. But I think I think he's a yes. I've always voted for him for yes since his first year on the ballot. But I think that's where it gets very tricky. Then you have a guy like Rafael Palmeiro, who's next, who still denies ever using steroids, but did test positive at a time when they were actually testing. Does that change your vote for him?
First of all, I'm just now remembering, didn't Bagwell break his hand on the last game? Yeah, so he would not have done that damage in 94.
I was going to correct you.
If there had been no strike and he hadn't broken his hand, he would have missed a lot of ifs.
I was going to correct you, but you were just rolling. You were rolling. I mean, I don't want to interrupt.
Well, Palmeiro, if you remove the name Rafael Palmeiro and you call him Player X and you look at his career stats, and you see that he had 3,000 hits, 570 home runs, or whatever it was, 1,800 RBIs, and, you know, 885 OPS or whatever. You go, oh yeah, I guess this guy's in the Hall of Fame. You know,
yeah, ridiculous. Oh, no question.
And last year he got 12.6% of the votes.
Yeah.
So he is a guy who it's a 100% a steroids thing. It comes down to him, like, basically pointing at a bunch of congressmen and saying, I've never used steroids, and then testing positive.
Yes.
That's what this whole thing is, which is why, again, it seems kind of ridiculous to me. He has 3,000 hits and 569 home runs. Was he the most dominant first baseman of his era? No. Did he get a lot of, like, things attributed to him that he didn't deserve, like that year that he won a gold glove, even though he was a DH the whole year?
Right.
Yes. But for God's sake, I mean, he was amazing. He was a great, great hitter. And I think it's a little bit crazy that it's only 12%. I mean, he's almost in danger of falling off the ballot. It's crazy. It's one of these. It's a classic deal where in the cool lighting inner sanctum universe, I vote him in automatically. Yes, absolutely. And keep him out of the cool lighting inner sanctum. Without that, I think I would have maybe, just because I'm bummed out by steroids, not voted yes on the first ballot, and then I would have voted him after every ballot after that.
Well, do you draw a line? Do you draw a line in the fact that he tested positive in a different era? He tested positive when it was being tested for one thing, but also when it was very much a taboo. I mean, it was very much, hey, take it your own risk. I mean, it was much different than it was even 3, 4, 5 years earlier. Do you draw a line there, or do you is it exactly the same?
I don't know. It's so silly and messy. It's like, how do you, like, the problem with drawing lines is that immediately you find examples of people who would change your mind on where that line should be drawn.
Sure.
So I just don't know. I mean, if you're just saying, like, who are the guys who were the best players in baseball, he was one of the best players in baseball. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He had a great career. He was a great hitter, not just a power hitter, but just a great hitter, period. There aren't that many guys. Now, he had a long career, too.
Sure.
I mean, you know, but so, you know, that some of that, that's what the argument against Biggio is always, well, he had 11,000 at-bats. Of course, he had 3,000 hits. But, you know, a lot of guys who had that many at-bats don't have close to the number of hits that he had or that Palmeiro had. I mean, I think unless you're really making a stand and saying that anybody who used steroids or got caught using steroids that doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, you have to say that he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
It really is messy. All right, we're going to go a little faster. Tim Raines.
Well, what's your Palmeiro vote?
Oh, I'm a no. I'm a no on Palmeiro. And I'm a
really?
No. Well, I've been a no only, well, there are a couple of things. One, I mean, you were explaining it so well. I think he is a longevity guy. I don't think he was, you know, in an era where I think you have to mark people down because it was such a big offensive era, I don't think he was all that special. I think there were a lot of hitters that were as good. Well, not a lot, but there were a number of hitters that were as good. And secondly, I do draw a line on when they started testing. I think the rules were in place then. It's different. It's you know, to me, it's like people who gambled on baseball in 1908, I'm not thrilled about it. It's awful. They knew what they were doing. It was against the rules. It was against the law. It was against, but it wasn't the same as after 1919 when it was basically you will be banned for the rest of your life, you know? And I think that's, I feel the same way about the steroid thing. I think it's different after you, after the testing is in. Once testing is in, now it's fully understood. Oh, you're taking it. That's fine. But just understand, you get caught, it's going to be a suspension. It's going to be sort of public humiliation. And it's going to be a real blur and a real black mark on your record for the rest of your life, you know, as a baseball fan, from a baseball fan's perspective. So that for me is why I don't vote for Rafael Palmeiro. But he was a great player. He was a great hitter. And I don't know that I'm, you know, I don't know where, you know, everybody's drawing lines. I don't know where you draw the line. To me, there are 10, there are 10 guys on this ballot that I like better as a Hall of Fame candidate. So for me, this year, it's going to be easier. But in the past, that was sort of where I drew my line was if you, once you test positive, that's a different question to me.
All right.
So, all right. Tim Raines.
Tim Raines is I don't understand why he's not in the Hall of Fame. He was he's probably the second best leadoff hitter of all time, and he had the bad fortune to play alongside in the same time as the greatest leadoff hitter of all time.
Yes.
And I think that people have greatly underestimated his abilities. He was a phenomenal player. His stolen bases and caught stealings are ridiculous. It's a crazy high percentage. And he had a .385 on base percentage. He did the only thing that you really have to do as a leadoff hitter, which is he got on base all the time.
Yes.
In an era when on base percentages were very low, and it wasn't as important to walk as it is, you know, in later years. And he did it constantly. And you know, he had 2,600 hits, and he had some power too. You know, not the same power as Ricky Anderson maybe, but he had decent power. And he's a guy who's never hit 50% on the ballot so far. And I think that's a weird travesty.
It's a weird one. I mean, you know, it really is. I'm a big Tim Raines guy. The stolen base thing. Here's what I would say for Tim Raines, and then we'll move on to the next. Should have won probably 1, 2, or 3 MVP awards. And never won one.
Yeah.
Never won any. But he wins 1 or 2 of those MVP awards that he pretty clearly should have won in the 80s. Maybe people view him for the player he is. He also has a drug issue, by the way, in the past. I mean, he was, you know, he had the cocaine thing. He really not only overcame it, but became a real leading advocate against drugs. And I think that has to be considered. But it is interesting, you know, that was something that when he first got on the ballot, I think that people would talk a little bit about. And now with the steroid thing, everybody's like, ah, cocaine, big deal. So, you know, it's really changed the dynamic on that front. Okay, Alan Trammell.
Trammell is a real borderline guy for me. I know he has very passionate advocates, and I get it. An argument for him is always that he kind of changed the position, that he was a great fielder, but he also had more pop than shortstop usually have and all that sort of stuff. But I don't quite see the cut and dried case for him. He's like one of those, you know, he's really, 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 really good. I think I would vote no on Trammell and get yelled at by Keith Law.
And Keith would yell at you. No, Trammell's a great. I'm a yes on Trammell. By the way, there's one other thing we should say. I mean, how big is your Hall of Fame? I mean, that's a big question. I mean, where do you draw the line? Is it necessarily, it's just like I want a more exclusive Hall of Fame or I want a more inclusive Hall of Fame. I look at Alan Trammell historically. That's why I vote for him. I think compared to the greatest shortstops in the game, he compares very, very well. I don't think he was as good a player as Barry Larkin. I think people say, oh, Barry Larkin, that's a perfect fit. I don't think it is. But I think you look throughout the history of the game at the shortstops that are in the Hall of Fame, I think he's an upper half guy in that list. And to me, that's if that's the standard, I vote him. But I certainly think he is right on that cusp. Where are you? Where are you on Edgar Martinez?
I would vote yes on Edgar Martinez. I don't quite understand the argument that he was, quote, only a designated hitter, end quote, because that's a position that happens in baseball teams. Like, there have to be guys who were designated hitters. And as a designated hitter, he was a great designated. He was the you know, up until maybe you could say, you know, Ortiz or somebody.
Sure.
He was the best designated hitter who played that position. And it's not his fault that that is the position and that the skill that was required was just hitting. He was great. His OBP career is 418. He had a 933 OPS, a 147 OPS plus. He was a great hitter, and that was his only job, and he did it great. And I think it's one of those kind of like, it's like punters in football. It's like, you know, people always say, excuse me, like, well, he was just a punter. He doesn't belong in the Football Hall of Fame. Well, punters are a part of football. Like, you need to have some punters in there. And I think the same, it's a little bit the same. It's not a perfect analogy, but yeah, he was only a designated hitter. That was the position that he played, and he was great. And he, I would vote yes with a knowledge that it's kind of a little bit of a like protest vote to try to get people to change the way that they view, you know, the designated hitter position, I guess.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm a yes. I've voted for him in the past. You know, Paul Molitor was a designated hitter for a very substantial part of his career. He was a better hitter. Right. He was a better hitter than Paul Molitor. I mean, Paul Molitor was a great hitter. But Edgar Martinez is a better hitter. And so, you know, I think I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a really interesting question because would you rather be, and I'll ask you the next guy, is Mike Piazza. I think Mike Piazza and Edgar Martinez are very, very similar offensively when you look at their career offensive performances. They're both incredible hitters, similar lengths careers. I think batting runs, for instance, there's just like maybe one or two runs apart. I mean, they're very, very similar as hitters. But obviously Mike Piazza was a catcher. Just as obviously, Mike Piazza was not a very good catcher. I mean, that was always there were people say, oh, he's underrated, but you know, he couldn't throw, and he wasn't especially good at like blocking the plate. And I mean, pitchers didn't like throwing to him. These seem like negative things. So the question is, would you rather have, and catcher is not a great example, but would you rather have a subpar first baseman than a DH in the Hall of Fame? I mean, is that important to you? Because Edgar Martinez could have been a subpar first baseman. I mean, if they, you know, if there was no DH, his bat was good enough, he was going to play. So he could have been, you know, Prince Fielder defensively, I'm sure. But he wasn't. So I agree with you. I vote for him. And then, you know, Piazza, I vote for him as well.
Yeah, I mean, he might have been a kind of a lousy catcher, but he's probably the best hitting catcher of all time.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say no to the guy who has the best numbers of any catcher in history. It's like, well, what is your standard? It's
right.
Like, you know, you can't. It's the toughest position to play by far. And maybe he was below average, but he still played the position,
yeah.
And he played in the National League. He was not on a team where he could have been a DH or something. But, you know, so he's the best hitting catcher of all time. That guy's got to go to the Hall of Fame.
And he has his defenders defensively, by the way. I mean, there are people that say he did. He ran a game well and all that. I'm doubtful. I mean, I'm skeptical of it. But it doesn't matter. He's the best hitting catcher of all time. He's in.
Yeah.
Okay. Two other guys that I think are going to be, well, actually, I'm telling you, this ballot is so loaded.
It's ridiculous.
Craig Biggio.
Well, I get the longevity argument with him. I mean, the guy had 11,000 at-bats. So,
yes.
You know, he had 3,000 hits, but he had 11,000 at-bats, a lot of at-bats. But my argument in favor of Biggio is that he played three positions, and they were all hard positions. He was a catcher, a second baseman, and a center fielder.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not easy to play any of those positions as long as he played them. And he played at a pretty high level for his whole career. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if he's a first ballot guy. I don't think I would vote him in on the very first ballot. In the world where there's this inner sanctum with just really super cool Pink Floyd laser light show style lighting that you've set up, I think I would vote him in and keep him out of that room. But his numbers are not so overwhelming and amazing that I think he's an automatic bid. So I think I would probably not. I would probably vote no on the first ballot, but I could be convinced otherwise.
Well, I'm a yes on Biggio. Again, obviously, it's pretty clear. I'm yesing a lot of guys. I have a pretty big Hall of Fame in my mind, but here's why I'm a yes on him. It's not 3,000 hits. That's not it, even though I think that will eventually get him in. And I actually thought he was going to get in first ballot. I'm now kind of doubtful because I'm hearing a lot of what you're saying. Here's what I think Biggio is underrated. I think 5 or 6 years in the middle of his career in the 90s, Biggio was one of the best players in baseball. I don't think there's a longevity. There's a longevity question on the end. I'd say the last 4 or 5 years of his career, he was kind of useless. I mean, he was not, he wasn't useless, but he wasn't much above that. But I would say from probably 94 to 99, somewhere in that range, 5 or 6 years, he was great. I mean, he wasn't just good. He was a great player. He was a get on base guy. He was a Gold Glove defender. He there was one year he had, I don't remember which year it was. I think it was 95, 96, somewhere around there, 97. He didn't hit into a double play all year. You know, he hits with power. He steals bases. He didn't hit into a double play all year. Yeah. And he won a Gold Glove. I mean, he was a guy where if you wanted to add everything up together, was probably a legitimate MVP candidate 3 or 4 times in his career. So
yeah,
I vote him in because I think he was a great player and he has longevity. If you have both of those to me, I think you're a Hall of Famer. I think that's where the question comes in is if you have longevity but you don't have that 4, 5, 6 year peak, are you a Hall of Famer? Or if you have that 4, 5, 6 year peak but don't have longevity like Dale Murphy, are you a Hall of Famer? So those are the real difficult questions. I think he's got both, but I don't know that he's going to get in now, first ballot, and I think it's going to take a little time. And I think he's going to get in, but I don't think he's going to get in for the right reason. I think he'll get in because he has 3,000 hits, but I don't think that's what it should be. McGuire, Sosa.
Well, I think it's the same thing as Bonds and Clemens, really. I mean, you know, I was very surprised to hear, you know, when McGuire first came up, there were people who were sort of saying, you know, he doesn't even forget about the steroids. He doesn't deserve to get in on his numbers. Yeah, which I think is kind of crazy because he compares pretty favorably to like Reggie Jackson.
Sure, you know,
like he does, his numbers are ridiculous. It's 583, and you know his OBP is almost 400 for his career. His OPS is almost 1,000 for his career. I mean, this is his seventh time on the ballot. He got less than 20% of the vote last year. Yeah. That is just so. This is, again, it's a completely about steroids, and so it's the same issue as Clemens and Bonds. I don't think there's an argument to be made against him based on his numbers. If it were player X and player X had never had any steroid suspicion, I think he's an easy call. So people say he hit 263. That was his batting average. But that's just, if you think that batting average has anything to do with Mark McGuire's candidacy for the Hall of Fame, then you're too far gone to really rationally argue with. So I would vote yes on McGuire and Sosa, I think.
Well, McGuire, I would say this. McGuire, to me, is another category in the steroid thing. And we're talking so much steroids. He admitted it and apologized for it and tried to say that, hey, I'm willing to be a part of the story to clean this up. I'm willing to admit my mistake. And he's taken terrible, terrible abuse for that, by the way. And I would say, by the way, that's a lesson to you, by the way. If you use steroids, keep it to yourself, because I mean there's no apologizing in this culture, I think, for these ideas. It's what Pete Rose found. Everybody told Pete Rose, oh, just admit it, you know, and of course he said no, and finally he did admit it, and everybody was like, okay, well, fine, you're out, you know what I mean?
That's a real bummer. That's another bummer to me, because I remember thinking that if Jason Giambi, when he was going through it, I remember thinking, like, you know what, he should come out and have a press conference. Remember he had that weird press conference where he said, I'm really sorry for what I've done. And they said, what have you done? And he's like, I can't talk about it. I'm really sorry for it. And it was just very weird and kind of Orwellian and creepy. And I remember thinking, if he had come out and said, hey, listen, here's the deal. I use steroids. I use this and this and this and this, and it really helped me. And it healed my injuries and it made me stronger. And it was a huge mistake. And I'm really bummed out. And steroids are dangerous. And high school kids use them. And the people have died from using them. And I am a guy who has a 7-year, $140 million contract, or whatever it was, for playing baseball. And I've been incredibly lucky. And I made a dumb mistake. And I'm going to take my entire salary from playing for the Yankees next year. And I'm going to start a foundation that tries to prevent high school athletes from using steroids.
Absolutely.
If he had done that, or if any of them had done that, I think that the world would be a different place a little bit. And I think that guy, whoever that first guy was that made a big gesture like that, that admitted that he was wrong and that he had cheated and screwed up, and then also tried to do some real good while being a player in the league, that guy is going to make the Hall of Fame. Like, know what I mean? Like, and I know that McGuire did, like, sort of admit it, and he talked about it, but he also, when he was in front of Congress, and there's all these, you know, I'm sure that they were getting advice from all these lawyers and player reps from the union saying you can't admit it and all this stuff. I wish one of them had just been like, you know what, screw it, I don't care, void my contract, do whatever you want, I got to make this right. And I'm gonna try to do the right thing. The first guy to actually have done that would have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, assuming that his numbers obviously were worthy.
I want to believe that's true. I'm not sure I do. I'm really not sure I do. I think people say, and I'm not speaking of you, because I think for sure it would be true. But I think in general, people say, hey, we're a forgiving culture, apologize, talk about, you know, be honest and this. I don't know that you can ever go far enough for people. You know, McGuire, people have picked at his apology. If you remember, when he spoke before Congress, he wouldn't say anything. He kept taking the fifth. And that was purely advice, because he wasn't going to lie and say he didn't do it, but he wasn't going to say he did it, because they were telling him, oh, you know, you could get in a lot of trouble here. You could get in a lot of issues.
There's perjury problems.
I mean, there's all sorts of issues that could be involved here. And so, you know, he did what, you know, was I suppose, the right thing to do in his own mind. And, you know, I'm not sure that it would have changed if he had come out and said, oh, yeah, I did it, and I apologize, and I'm going to speak to high school teams all across the country. Some people would have said, okay, that's great. But a lot of people have said he didn't go far enough. He didn't tell us what kind he was using. He didn't go day by day. I've just seen that. I've kind of lost a little faith in that argument. All right. We are all about out of time, so I'm gonna run through the names, and then we're just yes knowing here at this point.
All right,
Larry Walker.
Really, all I get is yes or no. God, it's really hard. The
borderline,
total borderline case. It's the holidays. I'm in a big Hall of Fame holidays kind of mood. I'll say yes.
Okay. By the way, I'll give you a yes or no. You get two options. Yes or no, the way it stands now, and the yes or no, if we have the inner sanctum that we're going to build in the Hall of Fame.
Oh,
with incredible
inner sanctum.
Yes.
Inner sanctum. Yes. No inner sanctum. yes, I'll say yes.
Okay. If I disagree with you, I'll say so. Kenny Lofton. Right.
No.
No, either one.
Quite, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very, very close.
Right now, no. Yeah.
Kenny Lofton is a guy, by the way, people will look back on his career and realize he was a lot better than they remember.
He was phenomenal. He was amazing. He was great.
And I'm not saying he's all fair, because that's really, really close, but he had a great career. He had a great career.
Yeah.
All right. Jack Morris, you're already a no. So David Wells, you're obviously going to be a no, even though David Wells probably... You could make an argument better career than Jack Morris. That's what's so... His war is higher, for instance. That's just an example. Bernie Williams?
No.
Either one?
No.
Dale Murphy?
Oh, man. I will say inner sanctum, yes. No inner sanctum, no.
Okay. Lee Smith?
Same thing? Yeah.
Don Mattingly. This is great. I love doing this. I absolutely love doing this.
Mattingly, I say no.
No, either one. Okay.
And by the way, just in case anybody thinks it's Red Sox bias on my part, I didn't think Wright should have gotten in.
But what about Dwight Evans?
Dwight Evans, I would make a very, very good case for.
Yes.
I would say
yes, absolutely.
I think the fact that Rice got all that love and that Evans never did is weird and crazy, considering that he played the toughest right field in baseball and played it incredibly well for a very long time. And if you look at his career numbers and his peak numbers, there's a very, very easy argument to be made that he was a better player than Jim Rice.
I think so. I mean, that's how I always felt. And I always felt, even if you could make the argument he wasn't a better player, he was a similar player, he got no support. He got no Hall of Fame support.
None at all. It was weird. It was like a conspiracy.
It's so strange. Okay. All right. So that's our Hall of Fame thing. And so now we just have a little bit of time for our draft.
And by the way, just real quick, I also now hate all of my choices and want to change my mind about everything. So let's just that for the record.
Every single choice that you said, we're just reversing it. Just reversing it,
yeah.
And it'll be good.
And then I'll reverse it back to what it was tomorrow.
All right, so now we're going to do our draft. And we had this amazing draft last time.
It was a great draft.
I think it changed, would have changed the world had people been able to hear it. Sadly, they did not get to hear it. But last thing, it was stuff that we don't like that everybody loves, basically. Or,
right.
You know, that was our thing. So this time, again, that's goofy. So this time we went with something much more serious. We're doing superpowers we wish we had. That is,
yeah.
Is that right? Superpowers we wish we had. And
yep.
And I've been told by my kids that I'm going to get killed in this draft. And the reason is, and you tell me if I'm wrong, you played Dungeons and Dragons, didn't you?
Oh, I don't want to comment on that, Joe. I played a number of different games in my life. And I'm actually, you know what's interesting, though, is I'm very nerdy in many ways. I was not a comic book guy.
Really?
I was never into comic books. I was a baseball card guy at
sure.
a time when you kind of had to choose in my school, and I was 100% baseball cards. I never read comic books. I didn't like them or understand them. I'm not a huge comic book or a movie guy. I'm not a comic book reading guy, so this is not actually my area of expertise. I would say right now you're favored in this draft.
No. I'm poor-mouthing here. I'm leading the poor-mouthing thing. I was never a comic book guy, although I do like comic book heroes. I like the concepts of them.
All right.
But yeah, you're definitely not only have it was 4-1 in Vegas.
When, really?
Which is amazing, you know, because they didn't even hear the last draft, which I won.
I think this is a classic 2007 Super Bowl situation though, where you take the underdog. If it's 4-1 in my favor, you take the underdog.
Take the underdog. Okay. And you actually get to lead us off.
Really?
Yeah, because I led off in the draft that we never heard.
All right, I'm going with Flight for my number one
pick. Of
course
you are.
It's very basic. It's a dream that we've all had, that we could fly. It seems like the coolest thing you could do is just take off and fly around the world and go wherever you want to. It's the thing that, like, humans, I think, in our earthbound existence long for more than any other thing, even though there are certainly cooler powers, which I'm sure we'll all name. Just something about just being able to fly whenever you want to sounds so awesome. Not to mention the fact you never have to go to an airport again or go through security, which is just like that's worth the price of admission. So it's a little bit of a reach at number one, I would say, but I'm going Flight.
I totally disagree. I think it's Tim Duncan. I don't think there was you could not have chosen another power at number one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the power. It's the power.
Yeah.
And it also forces my hand. So my first pick has to be teleportation. It just has
right.
to be, because those are the two. I mean, I have to get there. No matter what superhero I am, you got to get there. I'd rather fly. There's no question you win the round because you'd rather fly. But if I can't fly, I want to be there fast. I can't go through the airport. I don't have time for the security thing. So
right.
So I'm going to go with teleportation, which, by the way, is really it's I can't believe we haven't figured out how to do it. I mean, it's like flying, you know, you got to strap something on or whatever. But you give like these people, these geniuses that are building like the iPad and then making it smaller, like these guys. You're telling me they can't come up with a way to just, like, do something molecularly that you could just put me from one place to another? I just think that has to happen, like, not only in our lifetime, but, like, by Christmas 2014, right? I mean, I can't believe we don't have that yet. I really don't.
I like that in your mind, scientifically, a smaller iPad and the ability to teleport are roughly equivalent.
I don't think they're equivalent. I think the iPad is much harder. I think teleporting... Like, when I was a kid, if somebody said, okay, look, what are the two things? One is going to be you're going to get this thing that's, like, tiny that you're going to be able to carry around that's going to have, like, every book, movie, and musical thing you've ever heard of in your entire life, and you'll be able to read anything you want across the world. Or I'm going to be able to transport you from this side of the room to that side of the room. No question which one I would think was harder. There's just no question. So, I mean, the Jetsons had no iPads, but, you know, they had teleporting. I don't know if they did actually on the Jetsons. All right, so that's our first round.
My number two pick is time travel. Time travel is very risky, as we all know.
Yes.
You go back and you change things, and then and you come back to the present day, and bad stuff has happened. And I'm aware of all the dangers. I really am. However, if I could go back and tell John McNamara to put Dave Stapleton in it first, I would do it. So
I
feel like just that alone, and also to be able to go theoretically into the future and just check out what's going on, just see, like, did something terrible happen? I prepare for something that's going to happen. You know, it's a very risky thing because you learn a lot of stuff if you, in the future you might not want to know. And if you go into the past, you change things and it screws everything up and, you know, a butterfly flaps its wings, et cetera, et cetera. But come on, time travel. If you have the chance to time travel, you got to take it.
By the way, I've always thought time travel is two picks. I mean, it's going to the past, going to the future. Those do not seem to me to be similar in, like, constructing an actual time machine. Like, I've never understood why, like in Back to the Future, it's like, oh, I can go to the future or the past. Like, no, I mean, you can only go backward. I don't understand the forward, even how you can do that. I've also never understood why people are so afraid of screwing things up in the past. That, to me, that would be awesome. That'd be so great. Just get to you're messing with the time continuum. I don't care. I mean, it's at some point, if I cared so little about the time continuum that I went in a time machine to start with, I don't think I'd care. And let's face it, you tell, you know, John McNamara to keep to put Stapleton in, or you tell, you know, Grady to keep Pedro in. You know, that changes everything. I mean, seriously, like Soviet Union still exists. You know, I mean, it's like everything changes if you do.
Well, the other thing about, like, the fear of screwing things up is it's not like things are so amazing now that we don't want to get rid of them. It's not like the world has no problems, right? So, like, let's, you know, go back and change some stuff and then see maybe it's a better universe.
Since you're going with time, I'm going to go with what I've always wanted to do, the superpower I've always wanted to have, which is the ability to stop time. I've always thought that is, like, you know, obviously when you're a kid, you're like a teenager, you want to do it for different reasons. But the ability to stop time to me could make you the most awesome athlete ever. Like, you could be, you're a baseball player and just, like, the guy's pitching to you and, like, you stop time right before the ball's there. You'd be awesome. You'd be like, I think that's what Barry Bonds did in his, like, you know.
It wasn't the cream and the clear. It was that he had the ability to stop time. That's why he was so good.
Stopping time is awesome. Because really, you don't even need teleportation if you can stop time, right? Because you could just stop time and then you'll get wherever you get. Of course, you'd have to walk. I mean, that wouldn't be fun. But, you know,
you'd have to walk unless you could fly.
I don't know if a teleportation machine works during the blackout time that you've frozen time. I think freezing time is very cool because you could do it like, I mean, if you're stopping time, you're stopping time all over the world. You're not just stopping time like in your hometown or whatever. And that would be awesome. I just think that would be great. You could do it, you know, spur of the moment. You just want to go check some things out. You want to, you know, see where everybody's standing. Somebody's like, you could stop crime, like, instantly. It'd be great. I think it'd be great.
All right, my third pick, I'm going invisibility.
Okay.
It's in the same family as flight, I would say. It's just a thing you always wished that you could do when you were a kid.
What would you do
and
with it?
Being invisible and just walking around and observing people without them knowing you're there. There's a lot of, again, very dangerous.
Yes.
You're going to learn a lot of stuff that you don't want to know about what your friends really think of you. but the idea of just like boop and then you're invisible, that's amazing. That would be fantastic. I think right now I'm an invisible time traveling single man flying unit, and I'm pretty amazing as a superhero.
I gotta say, I don't see the value of invisible.
Really?
If I'm Harry Potter, I see it, right? I mean, if I need it, you know, I like the cloak. I like the cloak idea. If I need it. But how's that helping me? I mean,
Are you kidding? You know, you're at a cocktail party, you say something embarrassing, and then you just turn invisible and no one.
I've got a teleportation machine.
That's amazing to me.
I'm in China.
Just be able to get out of any awkward social situation by just going goodbye and then turning invisible. That sounds so fun.
The only advantage I see is I could, like, sleep later in the morning, right? I mean, it's like, hey, where's your dad? Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen him. That's the only thing. I really think invisibility is, like, a very overrated trait. Now,
all right.
Now you mix it with some of these other powers you have, I could see it. But in and of itself, just the ability to be able to turn invisible, it's like at some point that turns into a parlor trick. There's like, there's nothing really you can do. I mean, I guess you could like help the world maybe, but not really. I mean, do you get to go through walls and stuff when you're invisible or
no, you can get into any sporting event you want for free. Think of it that way.
Sadly, I do that now. I mean, that's really, you know,
that's true.
Since you went for one that I don't even like, I'm going to go completely off the board for one. And obviously, we're just inventing these as we go. I'd like to be able to speak every language. It's actually an idea that Michael Rosenberg of the of Sports Illustrated came up with. He was trying to come up with sports writer superpowers, and most of them were really weak, you know, like the ability to double your Marriott points or something. But, you know, I think the ability to speak every – that would be awesome. And that would be – I don't know that you'd be able to do any good for mankind or whatever – and you wouldn't be able to be a superhero using it. But if I could just go anywhere and just like talk to people in their own language, I just think that would be like amazing. I would just be, I'm always amazed when anybody can speak any other language. I mean, I know that's a very American thing, but I just think it would be awesome if I could just go, I'm in China, talking Chinese. I'm in Japan, I'm just wherever I am, talking to the people. I'd love that.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm with you on that. I'm going to say, though, that I'm going to go ahead and at four, I'm going to take omniscience, which is encompasses speaking every language and also adds knowing everything that's happening in the universe at all times. So I don't mean to, like, supersede you here, but I think if you're omniscient, what's implied there is that you can not only speak every language, but you can make any kind of calculation, mathematical calculation, you can know anything that anybody is doing, you can just knowing all things in the universe would you picked a subset of omniscience, I would say.
Well, one, I didn't realize omniscience
jumping
was one
ahead of
power,
you,
yeah.
Like, oh yes, oh, by the way, one small side note to being omniscient is that you know every language.
I didn't know omniscience was like a category. It's sort of like I want to be a god. I didn't know you could just like pick like an overriding thing. Plus, secondly, I would tell you that omniscience is not what it's cracked up to be if you listen to Nate Silver. So I'm thinking at some point... Yeah, no, it's omniscience. Obviously, that's great. You know, so omniscience, does that encompasses mind reading as well? I mean, is that basically?
Well, I don't know. I would say telepathy would be mind reading. I'm not sure if omniscience allows you to know people's thoughts. That's a really good question. We'll have to check with the judges on that.
that's a really good one. Now, I basically the three I've given you were the only three I could come up with. So I went to my daughters. I know it's like. So I went to my daughters, and they've gave me all sorts of choices. So I'm going to do for my fourth one, I'm going to go with one of theirs choices, which I don't know. I mean, I'm not going with laser from the eyes, which was really a good one that my youngest daughter went with. And I'm also not going with talking with animals, which was another one that she came up with because I see no value to that. But I am going to go with... telekinesis, with the ability to move stuff. That is not under omniscience, right? You don't get to move stuff.
No.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Being able to move stuff, Yoda-ish kind of thing, like just being able... I always thought one of the amazing things of Star Wars, by the way, was at the end when, like, Vader is, like just pulling pipes off the walls and just firing them at him, and he's just like, oh, I guess maybe that's in the second one, right, where he's just firing pipes off the walls. Seriously, if you could do that, why would you ever fight any other way? Like, what do you need this? You could take anything and just absolutely throw it at the guy. I mean, that is, you cannot beat that. There is no way you could beat that power.
Well, there's one way, Joe, and that way is with a number five pick, which is super strength.
Super strength.
If you were the Hulk, if you had the strength of the Hulk, say, you would be able to not be affected by a little pipes and boxes and stuff that are flying at you. And in addition, let's say you were a mild-mannered 37-year-old comedy writer from Los Angeles who had dreams of a kid of being a professional athlete. It would make it a lot easier to play in the NFL, say, or in Major League Baseball if you had super strength and and you could basically lift anything. Or if you had the strength of the Hulk, you'd be a really good interior lineman. Or for that matter, a running back or a quarterback.
You could pretty much play any position.
I'm going to pick super strength at number five. And I'm just going to let you know right now that what I am is a super strong, omniscient, invisible time traveler with the power of flight.
However,
a pretty amazing superhero.
I'm just going to tell you right now, none of that. If I shoot a gun at you, you're dead. Right? I don't.
I'm invisible, man. You don't know where I am.
I'm finding you. I mean, you know. Let's face it. I can stop time. I mean, I can do whatever I want.
Oh, fair enough.
Well. Yeah, super strength was one of the many options that my daughters gave to me, along with by the way, shooting lasers from the eyes would be effective against you in that case, you know.
But I can just time travel back to 1 second before you shoot me with the lasers and then stop you from doing it with my super strength.
My wife's choice, by the way, which when I literally went up to the whole family and said, okay, I need to win this draft, which they have not helped me do, by the way. My wife literally said, I'd like to be able to cook a meal in 2 minutes. That's like the superpower she wants. Being able to cook a meal in 2 minutes. I don't think she was in the flow. She also suggested win every argument. Like, that's a superpower. Ooh. To win every argument, which is really cool. But again, how's that helping me against you? I mean, you're a super strong time traveler.
I'm omniscient. You can't beat me in an argument. I'm omniscient.
You cannot tell me omniscience counts beating you in an argument. I mean, I gotta have something.
I have every fact and figure at my omniscient fingertips.
All right, the fifth one for me is seeing the future. You can actually go to the future. I don't want to go to the future. I want to be able to see what's going to happen. And I only want to be able to see what's going to happen. I mean, I think the seeing the future, since you've sort of made incredibly large categories, I think seeing the future for me should be all the future. I could see 30 years from now if I want to. But really all I want to do is see the next 5 minutes. That's basically all. Is this going to work? Is this not going to work? Am I going down the right path, the wrong path? I just want just a very quick, like, okay, yeah, stop doing that right now. That's all I really want.
Right. Like, you think you're going to get off this exit at the highway. You don't know if it's the right exit. You look 5 minutes down the road and you're driving aimlessly around trying to find your way back to the freeway. Then you know not to take that exit.
And I think that helps me athletically, too. There's another one. I know exactly what the guy's pitching. I can stop time. So, I mean, I can,
sure.
You know, and on football field, I know where the defender is. I know where they're coming from. I'm stopping time and seeing in the future. I think it makes me unbeatable, frankly. I mean,
we're both going to be great athletes. There's no question. We're both definitely making the roster of a Major League Baseball team with our superpowers. So that part of it we've got locked down.
If you flew in a football game, at some point they're making that illegal, right? I mean, you can't just like take off at the 2-yard line and just like run to the end and fly to the end zone over everybody's head.
Well,
you know,
they're gonna have to adapt, you know. People adapted to the spread offense, they're gonna have to adapt to my ability to fly.
I understand that was what Nick Saban wanted to do next, was get somebody who could fly. You know, Belichick really would. He'd be watching film, like, all right, look, he flies when he takes off, you can get his foot right there and that's when you tackle him.
And then he would he'll play a nose tackle and 10 DBs or something. Like, he would try to guard against the ability to fly.
He'd put everybody in the end zone, and when you try to land, they just knock you out, you know. Although you have super strength, though, that would make it more difficult to pull that off. So, well,
sure.
Anyway, I think we've solved several of the world's problems here.
No question.
And, you know, I'm not going to say I won the draft, but if you think I won the draft, as a reader of listener who actually made it all the way through here, what are we going to put? For me, you got to put below. If you think I won the draft, you got to put below. What do you think?
Maybe I don't know. This might be too confusing, but since you want to speak every language, maybe they can say like victoire or something. Like,
how about
victory?
Exactly. Victory in whatever language you want to put. Language you want to put. Yes, I think that works. And for you, clearly, you just got to put super strength. I think super strength is because that's really your dominant feature.
That's, I mean, you got to admit that getting super strength as the fifth pick is a pretty great. It's a pretty great.
It is, especially because it was clearly going to be my next pick. I thought very hard about it at four, and went for the rather odd speaking every language one, I think, at some point or whatever. So anyway, and by the way, in the new year, one of the things that I'm trying to plan on actually doing is actually giving people prizes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I thought it would be nice since I've only been promising that every time. But frankly, every time I want to give people prizes, what I end up doing is just not recording another podcast. So I'm thinking this way. Now with all of the new technology that I've purchased, I'm thinking can focus on giving everybody prizes. So if you think Mike won, just put in super strength with a little hash mark in the comments on Sports on Earth. If you think I won, put victory in whatever language you want. And Mike, I can't thank you enough for joining us here.
Always a pleasure.